April the 18th, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5501. This will be public testimony.
I'm sorry, it's House Bill 5066. Cut and paste, your staff did a terrible job, Madam Chair. 5066.
All right, we'll try this one more time. This is the Subcommittee on General Government, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 5066, public testimony for the Department of Revenue, and invite up Mr. MacArthur et al. A special good morning to former Representative Lewis.
Good morning, Chair Johnson. It's really fun to be on this side of the table.
we'll try to keep it that way.
If you could, this is a simple, if you could speak directly into the microphone, it doesn't pick up that well, so for the record, so thank you.
You okay. Can begin in whatever order you'd like.
Good morning. I'm Columbia County Commissioner Tony Hyde, former AOC President and member of the work group managed by the Department of Revenue in 1998, which resulted in the 99 legislative revision of the state A&T funding program. Today I'm serving as MC for a brief but important set of presentations on the substantial county role in property tax assessment and taxation as supervised by the Department of Revenue. Before my brief background remarks, let me introduce my colleagues who will try not to overwhelm you with the information this morning. Yamhill County Commissioner and former Ways and Means Co-Chair Leslie Lewis, an AOC Executive Director and former AOC President, and former Sherman County Judge Mike MacArthur will discuss the origin and purpose of the State General Fund appropriate to the A&T Fund. Then Jerry Hansen, Washington County Director of Assessment and Taxation, Ray Erland, Clackamas County Director of A&T, Jim Gangle, Lane County A&T Director, and Ron Northcraft, Douglas County Assessor, will discuss in turn the county's critical role in property tax assessment system, the challenges faced by Lane County, and the proposal for a cost-effective pilot project to raise more revenue. Now a couple of brief remarks by me. I've given you a brief history of the A&T administrative cost sharing, but do not intend to address it. It's a solid resource document. If you have any questions, Gil Rydell is in the audience to answer the questions on that document. Counties are agents of the state for A&T purposes. The function is controlled by statutes and DOR rules. The property tax system will generate $3.1 billion this biennium for K-12 revenue, which serves as an offset to the state school fund. In total, we'll produce $7.1 billion this biennium for all taxing districts. The system is funded by $174 million per biennium of local and state funds, $97 million of which are county general funds. To help support the system, cities and special districts make direct contributions into the A&T fund from interest on delinquent property taxes from their 0 to 12% share, each in proportion to their relative collections. Cities contribute $3.6 million per biennium. Special districts contribute $1.65 million per biennium. If schools were to contribute in the same manner, the amount would be $6.93 million per biennium, rather than the $5,090,000 in the governor's recommended budget. Leslie and Mike will address the origin and purpose of the budget amendment.
Chair Johnson, Senator Morris, Representative Vakian, Mike MacArthur, Director of Association of Oregon Counties. Here we are again, your State Department of County Services, talking about another partnership that we have with the state, this one being in the collection of property taxes. In 1999, the association advanced the notion that the funding for the collection of property taxes for schools should be borne by those who benefit. And the legislature agreed. We decided in 99 that that was good public policy and a good investment. As the president of AOC in 99, I negotiated that deal with then co-chair Representative Leslie Lewis. And Leslie Lewis can speak to the actual details of how that public policy was arrived at, but that was meant to be a continuing appropriation from the state to the counties for the work done on behalf of collecting the property taxes for the schools. Commissioner?
Thank you, Mike. Chair Johnson, committee members, It's a real pleasure to be here this morning on this side of the table. I am Leslie Lewis, Yamhill County Commissioner, and as Commissioner Hyde said, I was the co-chair of the Joint Ways and Means Committee in the 1999 session. And I want to commend each of you for your work on Ways and Means. I've always told everyone it was the best job in the legislature, and certainly I think one of the most important jobs in the legislature. And I know how hard each of you work. It's a tough task to put together these budgets. I want to give you some of the reasoning behind creating the $5 million general fund appropriation for assessment and taxation that we created in the 1999 session, really for two main reasons. First of all, as Commissioner Hyde said, the counties are acting as agents of the state when we talk about the assessment and taxation function. And the state has a real interest in the property tax system for several reasons. First of all, it is in the interest of the citizens of Oregon and of all of the programs that are supported by property taxes to make sure that property is appropriately valued, commercial, residential, and industrial, and to make sure to the largest extent possible that it is uniformly valued across the state. It is also important that the system be fair both to taxpayers and again to the programs that are funded from property tax revenues. And I think that we all felt as legislators that those are really the state's responsibility with regards to property taxes, that the system be made fair, which is why the system is controlled by state statutes and by administrative rules. Secondly, we did recognize that there was a need to pay for some of the administrative costs on behalf of the K-12 property tax funding. And one way to do that would have been to treat the K-12 administrative costs the same way as we had done cities and special districts, and that would be to take a portion of the delinquent, the interest off of the delinquent taxes. However, as you know, K-12 funding, you drive to a per pupil spending number, which is made up of a combination of property tax and income tax dollars. So to the extent that we shifted property taxes away from K-12 funding, we just would have needed to shift more general fund to K-12 funding. So it made sense instead to make a direct appropriation to assessment and taxation from the general fund. And that is how we came up with the $5 million appropriation that we made in the 1999 session. We did mean for this appropriation to be permanent, and I would tell you that I also expected over time that as part of the base budget for Department of Revenue, it would increase over time, and I believe it is $5.09 million in the governor's budget today. And if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
So, as I do, increase over time tied to what?
The same current service level type concept that you would have for most of the budgets at the state of Oregon. Of course, with all of the budgetary difficulties, I realize that really hasn't been possible. But to the extent that other programs get inflationary increases, it made sense that this program would also get inflationary increases.
Thank you.
Chair Johnson, frankly, that was an oversight on our part. So it's currently tied to benevolence.
Bad plan.
If there's no more questions, I'll bring up the rest of the panel.
Please do. Yeah, if you need to get an extra chair, just bring one up. Good morning, gentlemen. We will ask you to move the microphone around to make sure that our committee staff can pick up all the comments.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Jerry Hansen. I'm with Washington County. I'm the Director of Assessment and Taxation. And we have three other assessor tax collectors here today to talk about this subject. I think together we have about 50 years of experience in, as assessor tax collectors, which is about as much as you'd ever want to have. And
this is when I say your boyish good looks belie that experience.
Thanks. And probably about twice that much in terms of just being appraisers and other things. So I'd like to introduce Ray Erland, and he's going to talk briefly about just a general overview of the importance of the property tax system for state finances as well as local finances. Ray's right here. Jim Gangle is going to talk about budget realities at the county level, and he's unfortunately been the poster child in terms of county budget problems, among others. Ron Northcraft, on the end, is the, by the way, Jim's the assessor in Lane County, Jim Gangle. Ron Northcraft is the assessor in Douglas County, and he wants to introduce a proposal to you today about reappraisal programs. And with that, I'll just let Ray go ahead.
Thank you, Jerry, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. I'm Ray Erland, Clackamas County Assessor. I was going to talk briefly this morning about the property tax system. You probably have my handout there. How much was billed for 2003-4, $3.6 billion for education and other local government services. So that's about $7.3 billion per biennium. Who gets the money? 42% goes to K through 12 and ESDs, which would be about $1.5 billion 2003-4 and probably $3.1 billion this biennium. Cities received 22%, counties 18%, special districts 10, urban renewal 4, and community colleges 4. Why do property taxes increase? We get that question after we mail our tax bills every year from the citizens. But under Measure 50, property taxes are limited to about a 3% increase unless there are changes to the property, such as new construction, and there's no new voter-approved money measures. Voters can vote to increase their taxes by approving new local option levies and new bonds, and they've done that. Local option levies for operations have increased, and the base year we're using here for statistics is 2003-4. In 1 year, schools increase their local option levies statewide 58% to $58.5 million. Cities went up even more than that to $53.9 million. Counties were only up 8%, and districts, special districts up 24%. I hate to use this word, but it's really true. Kind of like the Department of Revenue generates revenue by many of their activities. Assessors under the Measure 50 property tax system are revenue generators by the various activities they do. They value new construction, new plats, divisions of property, lot lines adjustment, rezone property, removal from exemptions, declassification of farm and forest property, new business personal property, and find and value omitted property. These functions all create additional assessed value and additional revenue for the taxing districts in Oregon. I remember the discussion in the session under Measure 50 is why is real market value important and should we even continue to maintain real market value? Well, we had Measure 5 before Measure 50, and real market value drives the Measure 5 compression calculation, minimum a maximum $5 for schools and $10 for local government. Most of the schools are in compression today, some less, some more. Last 2003-4, K through 12 and ESDs didn't receive $41 million of revenue because of the Measure 5 compression. So it's really important that assessors have accurate real market values on the properties every year. To maintain accurate values, assessors need some form of reappraisal activity, and they need a permit process to capture all the changes in property. Many assessors use complex computer system calculations to revalue property. Not all do, and it helps us maintain market value. There was a report in December of 2004 by the Department of Revenue submitted a year-long study of assessment and taxation funding to Joint Interim Revenue Committee. Many findings, and this is a summary, and basically said Measure 5 and Measure 50 created countless complexities. Performance measures are mostly positive, but they have some concerns. Probably the star is tax collection and mapping activities are in good shape. Counties and Department of Revenue become more efficient in administering the system. But then he went on to say, accurate real market values are currently hovering just within the acceptable range, and the counties and Department of Revenue just need to focus on this critical element of the system, and I've described why real market values are important. And if you have incorrect real market values and you value new construction, guess what? Then your new construction values are probably wrong, too. Maximizing tax-generating revenue by maintaining active reappraisal and omitted property discovery programs were found not to be adequate in all counties. And statistical data is not always as good as it can be for the decision makers here in Salem. And, of course, absorbing new statutory mandated programs can have negative impacts in other areas of responsibility because of the workload and the lack of staff. In conclusion, you know, it's essential that all new property and property changes be valued each year so taxing districts receive their fair share of the revenue. And stakeholders, I think, all have a part in maintaining the health of this system because a healthy property tax system directly impacts the dollars available for education and other local public services.
Does that conclude your...
That concludes my testimony.
I guess the question that I'd have is... And help me with this because I'm going to stumble around in my own question. You talked about efficiencies, and if we're talking about partnerships, we have the state and 36 partners. I would assume that the big counties have opportunities for technology that the little counties might not have. And so in looking at a system that is efficient, the comment you made that said performance measures have been mostly positive but not without concern, would those performance measures speak to how the individual counties are coming up to speed with respect to their responsibilities in making this whole system work? Or how would tell me what I'm missing about the performance measures, positive but not without concern.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe that what that means is there's several ways to evaluate whether the values are accurate that are out there. We submit a large statistical ratio report on an annual basis. We have what we call coefficients of dispersion that shows how the statistics of the sales are coming in, for example. And that if that is varying outside of a certain range, then it gives an indication that the property values are need to reappraise, or you have disparity or non-uniformity within the values. And I think that's the concern. Department of Revenue looks at all 36 counties' sales ratio studies. They also look at whether or not, you know, we send reports for the grant document, the CAFA funding, whether we're picking up how much new construction we're getting, how many lot lines adjustments and all that, and are we obtaining all the values that all the new value that's out there so that everyone pays their fair share. On computerization, generally you could say that large counties, they have this, probably many of them have the same funding problems as smaller counties, but some smaller counties have made the investment of technology a few years ago and are reaping the benefits today. Some didn't. Some of the large counties, and Jim Gangle from Lane County is going to tell you about Lane County, which is the fourth largest county in the state, and some of the decisions were made by the local commissioners that can affect technology investments. I hope that answers the question.
Thank you. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The statement in the DOR report, accurate real market values are currently hovering just within the acceptable range. Could you expand the definition of the acceptable range, what that means?
Well, the acceptable range is, again, that there are performance measures within the sales ratio study. And use Clackamas County as an example. We have about 10,000 sales and we have about 160,000 properties, that we analyze, send out sales questionnaires, look at the deeds, communicate with the owners, and we use that in a statistical array and do some field checks to see what some of the property values are selling for so much more or so much less. Do we have the inventory? I think what that means is, again, some counties, the sales ratio studies and real market values, it shows they should be out doing some reappraisal work. Maybe they're not capturing the inventory within the permitting system. And what happens is, if you don't have correct inventory on properties and in its sales, meaning decks, additions, remodels, things like that, if you don't know a lot of that information, what happens is it's going to sell for a lot less. On the flip side, if you haven't reappraised a neighborhood, say a non-homogeneous neighborhood that's had a lot of lack of repairs in the properties, you could have them selling for considerably less than the real market value. So I think in analyzing their sales ratio report and communication with the county's Department of Revenue finds, they aren't doing any. Some counties are doing some reappraisal in those areas that need to be. Some aren't doing any.
Take a crack at that.
You bet.
Just a short another way of explaining that, maybe. The ratio study has two basic measures. One is uniformity of assessment, and one is level of assessment. The level of assessment measure is the ratio of sales to our value, and it's fairly easy to get to 100% of the market on average, because you can adjust percentage-wise all the properties and find an average level of assessment. It's a lot more difficult to be uniform when you do that, because you have to be able to distinguish between the differences of properties out there. And the uniformity measure, I think, is where more effort comes in on reappraisal work and work to discover the latest changes in properties, so that your assessment will reflect the condition and the type of properties you're appraising. And that's called the coefficient of dispersion. And there are different coefficients for different kinds of properties, and it's a universal standard in the industry that we adhere to in terms of, a residential property group in a homogeneous area, you would expect a certain coefficient. So we keep track of those, and counties, that tends to be the big challenge for counties is the uniformity measure.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Gangle, Director of Assessment and Taxation from Lane County. I've worked at Lane County since 1977, and the only reason I think that's important to point that out to you is that I kind of have a history of the different things that Lane County has faced. Lane County has relied heavily on O&C timber revenue, and as that's gone up and down over the years, our fortunes have gone up and down. If you look at the chart I've attached on my handout there, too, you can see the up and down movement of the amount of revenue received from timber. And there's the first drop that occurred back in the early 80s that we refer to as a cliff. We went from about 14 million down to six, about total, a high of 17 million down to 6 million. And in fact, in my department, in assessment and taxation at that time, we dropped down from about 156 employees to 54 employees. So you can see what happens with the loss of that revenue. That revenue has fluctuated up and down.
Representative Avakian.
What caused the cliff?
Actually, that goes back to the loss of revenue from the O&C. The spotted owl, the stop in the economy, where we weren't harvesting as much timber as we were before then, and just a slowdown in production harvest of timber.
Thank you. Please continue.
It did come back. The revenue did come back, and you can see that it hit the highest point in the early 90s there, and we were up to about 17 million. And then it started going down with the amount of timber area that could be cut being reduced, primarily through spotted owl. Early in the mid 90s, and we saw a guarantee that guaranteed a source of revenue to the O&C counties, but you can see that it declined. In the early 2000s, we passed Public Law 106, Secure Rural Schools, that gave a stable source of revenue to the counties, and you can see that that's has increased through time. We're faced, though, with a new cliff because there's uncertainty around this continued revenue being passed again at the federal level. If you look at the second page, we have a chart that shows the history of Lane County's property tax levy. Lane County is kind of unfortunate in that we were stuck with a very low permanent tax rate. We have about the 35th of 36 lowest county rate in the state. Ours is about $1.29 per thousand, when most of them are ranging $2 to $4 or $5 per thousand of assessed value. And that's just the result of that reliance on that timber revenue through time. We didn't have the necessity to go out in the earlier years and get a new tax base. We're fortunate in that we did get a levy, a law enforcement levy, right before Measure 50 passed, and that was able to roll into our permanent rate. The problem we have, while we do have some stability, Lane County is kind of facing the jaws of increasing expenses. Like most local governments, we're faced with a high increase in our rates of benefits, as well as the PERS issue that all the other counties have been facing. The issue there is that our expenses have been growing faster than has our revenue and our ability to cover those expenses. Just as a result of all of this thing, though, we have reduced staff. First, as I mentioned earlier, in 1981, and then and again in 1997 with the passage of Measure 4750. In both times, the reduction in staff caused us to fall behind in our work. In the last 20 years, we've had four reviews or studies that have been done by the Oregon Department of Revenue, where basically they've come into the Assessment and Taxation Department, reviewed our staffing levels, and reviewed the amount of work that we have to do, and they said we don't have enough staff. We don't have adequate staff. Most recently, a review was done for January of 05. And as a result of that, the Board of Commissioners have committed to adding 4.5 employees this year and 2 employees next year. But that's done at the expense of other public services that the county has to provide. If you look at some of the things that the Board of Commissioners have been facing in terms of choices, is a reduction in 26 beds in the jail. The sheriff office patrol has been reduced to less than 24 hours. Youth service detention capacity will operate like at 32 of 96 beds. Mental health building will operate at about half capacity. Rural health clinics will be closed, and many misdemeanor crimes will not be prosecuted. So you can see that the boards of commissioners, while they feel they want to fund assessment and taxation, at least in Lane County, are faced with some very difficult choices and have been struggled to maintain that balance between adequately supporting the assessment and taxation function and taking care of the law enforcement and public safety functions of the rest of the county.
What I'm not sure I understand is the hydraulic between you're operating at a certain with a certain paucity of people to do the work. The department comes in and says you have to have more people in order to keep up your end of the partnership. Here, the county then is making its judgment that it will prioritize these 4.5 additional staff above other pressing needs in the county. But I'm trying to figure out, what if the county had said no? We want to keep mental health open. They hadn't provided those people. Then how's the relationship and the partnership work at that point?
Madam Chair, we were behind in doing our work. Our staff was inadequate. We were between 18 and 36 months behind in actually doing the work that we needed to do to stay current. The result of that is a loss of revenue, not only to Lane County, but to the other districts. For example, we estimated that $4.2 million was lost in revenue to the local taxing districts in Lane County. About $340,000 of that would have been to Lane County itself. What I mean by that is by us not completing our work and having everything current, specifically property divisions, we weren't capturing all the revenue that we should, and the districts and Lane County was not getting the adequate revenue to which it was entitled. In addition to that, schools are part of the mix as well. So since we're not collecting against all the property because we didn't have it all in the rolls, we aren't giving the money to the schools through the property tax system that we should have been.
Senator Morris, I'm still trying to figure out. Obviously, this was a problem. The county had decided that they didn't want to, and I think former Representative Lewis may have something to add. The county had made a judgment that it was not going to fund. Then the department came in and said, Lane County, you must catch up, and then the county elected to engage these 4.5 additional FTE to get you back up to speed.
Yes, and can I explain how we did that?
I'd love it if you would.
Sure. What we did is we looked at the amount of money that we'd received from the CAFA grant, because the CAFA grant, the money that we're talking about, the $5 million that the Department of Revenue gets, contributes between 20 and about 45% of the revenue that comes in to fund my department. So we looked at the amount of increased revenue we'd get on the grant. In addition, we looked at the increased revenue we'd have by going out and doing the appraisals and capturing that new value. We expected that we'd pay back the system in about 3 years. So the first 2 years, the county would have to put the money up front, but then in the third year out, we'd begin to get kind of a positive cash flow from the added value, the added revenue, by bringing our property divisions current.
Senator Morris.
That was exactly my question. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Please. Identify yourself for the record, if you would.
Jerry Hansen, Washington County Assessor. In addition to that, the Department of Revenue, under the funding mechanism created by House Bill 2338 back in a long time ago, gives the Department of Revenue the responsibility to withhold that grant money from the county if they aren't doing their job. So that's a big, big lever in the system.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And I think that's what former Representative Lewis wanted to.
Yeah, that's the point I wanted to make. Our ANC grants are at jeopardy if we don't maintain the staffing levels that the department says we need to maintain.
Thank you. That was very helpful. Okay, please continue your presentation.
Just one other point that I wanted to make in terms of the appraisal that Ray Erland addressed earlier. The issue that we've ran into is that the changes that have occurred in Lane County have caused us to fall behind in our accuracy of our evaluations. Case in point is Cresswell. The last time we actually looked at property in Cresswell is in 1990. Most of the houses in that area were built in the 50s and of medium to low quality. Since then, there's been a new neighborhood come in with higher quality homes along a golf course that had been put in. Well, unless we go out and actually look at those properties and realign those neighborhoods, we're never going to get the accuracy in our values that we need to have for fair taxation.
Okay. Sorry, a little guidance from the professional staff.
That's okay. I'm Ron Northcraft, Madam Chair, members. I'm Ron Northcraft, Douglas County Assessor. And there was a mention of 50 years experience. Well, I'm the newcomer. Even though I've got all the gray hair, I'm the newcomer on the block. I've been the assessor in Douglas County for a little over 6 years. But coincidentally, 36 years ago, I started in Douglas County as an appraiser, and we were involved in a reappraisal. Reappraisal in those days meant every property, every 6 years, there was no building permits. The assessor going out into the field was the only, by going out in the field, that was the only way you had of picking up the changes or the new properties, because there was no building permit system in existence throughout the county. Homes and structures, buildings just appeared. Now we're 36 years later. Measure 50 has taken effect. The reappraisal cycle has declined, and the actual reappraisal work that's getting done within the county statewide varies substantially. I know of some counties that are doing no reappraisal. There's one county that I had a meeting with and discussion, and they're on a three-year reappraisal cycle.
If I may interrupt you, why would they be doing no reappraisal if this whole partnership is based on the need for all the partners to be current?
I think right here is an example. They don't have the staff, and they don't have the funding to do it.
But the department came in and said you need these 4.5 additional people. The county commissioners agreed, and the people were put in place with a recapture over 3 years.
I think with the measures that Jerry was speaking of, they can be adjusted by your trending in the racial study by doing that, and hopefully your CODs don't fall too bad.
I'm sorry. This is an acronym free zone, COD.
Coefficient of dispersion.
Thank you.
The level of assessment between the properties, you've got perhaps a stable county that isn't seeing a lot of new changes, therefore that 10-year-old physical reappraisal is still good. You can come back and trend, you can adjust those values because the properties haven't changed. But if you're in a neighborhood or a county that's experiencing change, all three of us, I think, are counties that have a lot of change. You've got new properties occurring. You've got new structures, new things occurring. You've got to get out in the field to pick those up.
And I guess that's what the judgment that I'm trying to make here. You're looking for $5 million from the general fund to support work that's happening with our partners, the counties. And I'm looking for evidence of the partnership across all 36, not that some commissioners have elected to make other prioritization and are not being full and active partners, again, for lack of a better word, in this whole A&T process.
Madam Chair, I'd like to put this, Jerry Hansen, Washington County, I'd like to put this in perspective because I think we may be exaggerating. For you, it may seem different than it really is based on the way we're explaining this. If you look at the work the assessor tax collector does, we have a big chunk of our work is in discovering new construction and all the changes. That's probably 50% of our time we take on that. Then we have another big chunk of work, which is a lot less now, but it's responding to appeals. It used to be probably 8 or 9 times more than now because of Measure 50 stabilized the system, but it's still a big chunk. We have another chunk of work dealing with special assessments and exemptions. And then we have what we're talking about here today, reappraisal, which really is probably 10% to 20% of our time, maybe a little more. And what we're talking about is priorities. The biggest priority is getting the new construction, probably in most cases. The second priority would be appeals or maybe exemptions and special assessments. And so you get down to when your budget is tight, how much reappraisal work are you going to do? And that's really what we're talking about, is probably about 10 to 20% of our time might be contracted by 5 to 10, or maybe in some counties' cases they won't be able to do much of all of any reappraisal work. So it's one of those things where you can add, I think you can add a little bit to your budget and make a big difference, but it's the priority of the issue that is the difficult part.
Thank you. That was helpful.
And Ron Northcraft, Douglas County Assessor. My part in this presentation today is to illustrate the benefit of going out there in the field. In our office, we've gone through substantial staff reductions from 98, 33 to today, 27 that's funded. We've got 25 on staff. So I've got more than a 20% reduction. That's been by choice. The budget committee hasn't forced us to do it. The commissioners haven't. It just has we've been motivated by a new assessor, new ways of doing things. I come from the private practice and so field, and so I've tried to implement a lot of new technology. That has freed up some time to go out and do some reappraisal. In 2002 was our first year of going out there with laptop computers. We went out, and it cost us $28,000 to do a reappraisal in a suburban area of town, of the community. the taxes returned were about $15,000. That's new revenue ongoing virtually forever. So I figured we got a two-year recapture. I paid for the staff going out there. Actually, the taxing districts got new money. That new money paid for the staff's time in going out there, doing that 10 to 20% of our total work. We expanded that type of study into other areas and over the next few years, and we got varying returns on our investment, ranging from 3 to 6 years of recapture period. So, you know, it became evident that you can't go out and expect that two-year recapture in every neighborhood or in every county. I just recently talked to another county in Eastern Oregon. They're out there. It's probably a 10-year recapture. You know, they went out and did a reappraisal. They measured it, their cost, and we did some estimating the other day. It's going to take them 10 years to recapture the cost of going out there. But it's still new value that is found, new value on the roll, new taxes coming to all the taxing districts. What I would like to see is we have the CAFA study. Today we do not report the evidence of that. We don't measure the new tax dollars or the new values that we're creating. I'd like to expand our CAFA. I don't think it would take too much work to put that expansion of data in there that would show and demonstrate, but that demonstration isn't going to be the same county to county or even neighborhood to neighborhood. I've demonstrated that. You know, we've got to have, in my opinion, the continuation of the CAFA funding. For my office, we are down to 33%. That $5 million takes another 3% off of there. For our county, I've got a 20% additional general fund requirement this year coming forward.
Yeah, as Representative Ivakian.
I'm sorry, you're down to 33% of what?
The total CAFA contribution represents 33% of our operating budget.
All right.
And it will decrease down to 30% with that potential reduction of that five.
Thank you.
My funding requirements are going to increase 20% over what they were last year. And I see the likelihood of staff reductions, thereby taking my county out of the ability to squeeze out that extra time to go out and do reappraisals. We're going to have to cut someplace if they reduce our staff. So, you know, to me, we need to continue that contribution, and it's, you know, each county puts those extra dollars to work in different ways, but there are ways out there that some counties are utilizing them, and I think to a high degree. That's my part. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, this may be a question you're not familiar with, but what would it cost to do an MAI on a, say, a $300,000 residence? Do you have any kind of an idea?
Well, since I'm a licensed fee appraiser, but not MAI, I'm going to say that you're probably something in the $1,000 to plus dollar range. Very expensive. You didn't ask the question, but this right here, our appraiser out in the field, we're looking at a $7 per parcel cost of that appraisal. That's what it costs my county. When we were doing this laptop study in the field, that's not knocking on every door. That's driving by and taking a look, checking the depreciation quality of it, or the condition of it, and is there new structures or new things.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm getting that this is all there is, signal from the counties. Commissioner Hyde, any closing remarks, or have your colleagues laid out the county's case? Thank you very much. then, with that, I think, was there a sign-up sheet? Are there any other folks signed up to testify? Okay. And in the absence of other public testimony, we'll invite the department to come forward again.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Harshenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. We have one more presentation to transition between the public hearing and moving into a more detailed discussion in Phase 2, and that is a brief overview of the mapping program. That's going to be coordinated by Karen Gregory, who is the Administrator of the Property Tax Division for the Department of Revenue. So I'm going to back up, and she has a couple partners for that presentation.
Thank you. And Ms. Gregory, before you start, I think some of the things the committee wanted to focus on, we have been simultaneously doing the Department of Administrative Services budget, and how fortuitous that you're going to help add to this discussion.
Yes, ma'am.
Excellent. I think what we're particularly interested in focusing in on are where our complementary activities, is the entire undertaking complementary? It seemed, in the absence of additional information that you're about ready to provide for us, that there was the possibility that we could have two similar activities occurring with little or no intersection. And I think we're particularly interested in knowing how it is that the two agencies' activities are complementary. So with that interruption, I would now turn the presentation back to you if you'd identify yourself for the record, and we'll begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Karen Gregory, Administrator of the Property Tax Division of the Department of Revenue. And you have met Jerry Hansen, the Assessment and Taxation Director with Washington County. He will be helping with your map presentation, and Cy Smith, who is the GIS Coordinator for the State of Oregon. As you know, ORMAP, or the ORMAP project, is a digital statewide property tax lot base map, and Jerry's going to talk with you a little bit about the foundation of that.
Thank you. And if you wouldn't mind, as you reintroduce yourself for the record, are you serving on an advisory board, or in what capacity do you come before us today other than your professional role?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Jerry Hansen, Washington County. I've been on the ORMAP advisory board since its inception, and that board has really been one of the best, quite frankly, boards I've served on over my 33 years in government. And I think the reason is it's been a really good project in terms of the accomplishments and the kind of the mix of people on that board. I felt like it's been a job that the input really counted, as opposed to some of the other boards you might sit on that maybe or maybe not. And so I just recently resigned to give somebody else a chance, but that's why I'm here. And if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to give you a little bit of examples of maps, old and new maps.
I think we'd appreciate it.
What you have here is two sets of maps. The Mylar is the way we used to do it, and those Mylars are about 30 years old, in some cases even 35. And the paper map is what we're producing now out of computers.
Did the Mylar require special archival processes to keep it flexible, whatever, in condition?
Madam Chair, that's a very good question. And actually, there are no it is a permanent record. But the Mylar itself is considered to be probably less than permanent for a couple reasons. One is the ink falls off over time. And the other is the Mylar itself deteriorates. So that is an issue in itself. We're fortunate we aren't going to have to deal with that, because all the counties are fairly diligent about going to a computer-based mapping system, and the Mylars will be antiques within about 5 years.
And what's the county's incentive to go to the Mylar? I mean, to go to the paper mapping.
Madam Chair, that's another really good question. There's a whole variety of things driving that. One is the accuracy of the maps. The other more important thing is the accessibility of the maps to anybody that needs them. And the thing about the assessor's maps that I like to make a point of is even if the assessor was no longer necessary, the mapping, the cartographers would be, because those maps are the basis for almost any real estate transaction of any kind that you will do, and they are also the basis for many other governmental applications. So the real fundamental driving force is to make those applications more accessible to everybody.
Forgive me for drilling in on this a little bit. That doesn't quite answer the question that I asked. Serendipitously, in my private life through the interim, I was involved in doing a property transaction. And getting the Mylar signed and recorded turned out to be the single most time-consuming, problematic, and when the title company in Portland saw it, their response was, we haven't done this in 30 years. And so I'm trying to ask, counties are making priority choices all the time because of the constriction on their budgets. What, other than doing the right thing, incentivizes the counties to begin to prioritize the creation of these paper maps and computer-based over the Mylar? Are there grant funds that drive that conclusion, or are the agencies driving that conclusion? Give me something other than it stores better and we're waiting for them to do the better thing.
Madam Chair, there are a couple real driving forces. I think, quite frankly, the main one is the technology is so much better, and it's cheaper, and it's more accurate. And county government itself really likes the ability to use the assessor's map as a base for their GIS systems in a whole variety of ways, from, you know, land use to health department to sheriff. And those tools have become necessary to the ability to get the job done.
How many counties have undertaken the initiative to put in the computer-driven and computer recording methodology?
Madam Chair, I think the answer to that is all 36 have begun to do that. And ORMAP has been a major carrot in the process. I think eventually all counties would have been in that business, but I think this has allowed some of the smaller counties to get in it quicker. And the biggest thing I wanted to tell you a couple things today, and you've given me a great segue into the first one, and that is the transitioning from the old mapping, which is a pen and ink cartographer of old, to electronic digital mapping, which is a very technical, high-tech thing that every cartographer had to learn over again. And in some counties, the staff has turned over naturally, and by attrition, we've implemented new skills. In other counties, it hasn't been as quick, and you know, if you have only one cartographer on your staff, you might be waiting around for that person to retire, or you might take a more proactive approach. But it's a little different in each county, and I think it's been more of an opportunistic thing up until ORMAP. And that really was a good carrot, and I think ORMAP has been one of the best programs I've ever seen in terms of the potential investment turning into payback. The reason is, as I said, these maps are the primary focus is to provide the assessor with the ability to accurately tax properties, but there are so many other uses to it in real estate and the state agencies and the interaction with the federal government to try to figure out things relating to the ground, and ownership tends to be a main factor in that. And a statewide seamless digital map is just a huge advantage for a lot of this work that has to, we have to have data about what's happening on the ground. And so we started out with the concept that it would take us about 9 years to create this new digital seamless map for Oregon. It's going to take a little longer. But I think the strategy we started out with has been, is still a good strategy, and that is to use ORMAP as a carrot and to get counties to partner with a whole variety of folks. And we've listed the categories. The Department of Revenue does the mapping for 14 counties, and they are also responsible for standards. The counties.
May I stop and interrupt you there? When you say they're responsible for standards, the fact that ORMAP exists, are you guys giving technical assistance and guidance to the counties so that you're buying standardized equipment that all talks to each other and maybe finding some economies of scale in bulk purchasing of computer equipment or program?
Madam Chair, another good question. Yes, the answer is yes. I've seen several things happen that way. One, in terms of the hardware, we do have some, you know, just by working together, we have pretty good knowledge of what it takes for hardware to the tools. And but I think a more important example of that is in developing the software tools that it takes to actually produce these maps. And a county, for example, may go out and figure out how to speed up a particular process, and then all the other counties can take advantage of that. And ORMAP would be the seed money to do that. Training is another example of people that, you know, have been paid to get training from the software companies that produce the software. So.
Representative Avakian.
We on the House side just went through a very similar debate on the state records, moving from microfiche, which involves the county records, to digital record keeping. Our state archivist, which is similar to what you're describing here, our state archivist asked us not to do this. And the two reasons were, one, that in his opinion, the digital record keeping deteriorates over time, unlike in that case microfiche, in this case some kind of mylar or paper, I guess. And then two, that as technology changes, that you get yourself into a continual loop of having to buy new software, update your hardware, and retrain your employees, and that you do that on a faster and faster basis as technology changes. Otherwise, you can't access your old data. Is this of a concern, and if it is, what are your plans?
Representative Avakian, I'm also the county clerk at Washington County. My job is a departmental job, and I'm real familiar with this issue, and I agree totally with the state archivist on this issue. I have
That's very interesting, because that bill passed off the House floor with, I think, only 4 no votes, and it's heading over to you, and I'm not so sure we've tapped into the issue deep.
Well, Representative Vaki, unfortunately, the bill was requested by one of the county clerks, and you know, I think that was just unfortunate. I think there's a confusion here, though. What it really boils down to is it's very risky business to depend just on digital records as your permanent record. If you want to read that record 100 years from now, but the facts of life are those electrons don't always reappear when you want them to, and we aren't there yet with the technology for depending on those for permanent records. We just aren't. I don't know of any archivist in the country that would tell you that we are. I think it's true that it's a lot more efficient, and so it's very tempting to say, well, we don't have to do the microfilm anymore, but that I just don't agree with that.
Well, look, Mr. Chairman, I didn't mean to get us onto a discussion of microfiche, but with regard to the maps, it sounds like you're moving towards digital record keeping for the maps, but is there something in addition to that that you do feel more secure about?
Representative Vaki, very, very good question. I think the difference with the maps is what you will see is, and in fact, ORMAP is really going to solidify this, we're going to have multiple depositories for that data, for that mapping data. It's going to be with the assessor, with the Department of Revenue, with a lot of the agencies are going to use the assessor's map as a base map. We will also have the ability to produce a Mylar copy or a paper copy to, you know, as a backup. But that is an excellent question, and I think the only difference is instead of depending just on the clerk for those documents that are, you know, records that everybody has to know about, we have more of a larger system for the mapping data. And to be honest with you, I am not sure what the state archival requirement is for the assessor map itself, which is a Mylar right now, in terms of permanent, if it's a 100-year requirement or permanent or 50, I can't tell you that. So I'm not answering your question totally except to say that it's a different system because the clerk has the record. That's it.
Let me try one more time, if I may. Maybe I'm being concerned about something I don't need to be, so if you can quell my concerns, do it. I'm thinking 60 years from now, there's a dispute on the lines between one piece of property and another, and somebody goes to get the disk that it's on, and the electrons aren't working right, and you right. can't figure it out, and you got no physical map to go to anymore. And then the lawyers and the assessors start making, appraisers make a lot of money because they're trying to figure it all out. They don't have the data. Now, is my concern well-founded?
Thank you, because you just put it in terms I can really respond to, and that is the basis for these maps are in the recorder's office. They're the legal descriptions on the deeds. They're in the surveyor's office with surveyed records. They're in the road department with road centerline records. And so all that data is still permanently maintained in an archival base somewhere. So we can actually recreate the maps if the map data went away. We could go back, get those legal descriptions, get the subdivisions, get all the data we need to recreate the map.
Is there not a movement in all those areas towards digital records as well? Isn't that part of the whole discussion we just had with the state archivist?
That's true. And I think the real issue is what is good enough for a permanent record. And I don't think most people would say digital is good enough for a permanent record right now. And the issue, the thing about the maps is it's a reflection of a whole lot of different records, and those source documents are the ones that have to be protected. I hope that's not too fuzzy.
I guess what I get from that is that as long as those source records don't go completely towards a technology that can't be protected forever, I don't have any reason to be concerned, but I think you're telling me I should be concerned.
Representative Vavakian, I'm very concerned about that bill, to be honest with you.
All right.
What's the bill number, do you recall?
You know, I don't recall. We passed it off the floor on Thursday, I think, and so it's headed over to you. So, because that bill in particular affects, to a degree, what you're talking about here.
True.
I think I'm done. Thanks for the indulgence on.
I've probably taken a lot more time than I was allocated here.
Well, that was my fault, but it was good information anyway.
And just to wrap up, I think the ORMAP project is going well. We're going to run into a bit of a bottleneck on funding, but we're going to depend on our partnerships to step up to the plate. What we're going to do, I think, in ORMAP, the nice thing about the ORMAP funding, it's a stream of money that's dependable. The bad thing about it isn't quite enough, but what that's going to do is it's going to stimulate some of our partners, hopefully state agencies, to say, you know, I would really like to see that part of the state mapped accurately faster than you guys can do it, so I'd be willing to put some money into this thing. And I think Karen's going to talk about how that might happen in the next few years, and I'll just leave it at that. Thank you, Karen.
And I will be very brief with my comments. Again, Karen Gregory, Department of Revenue. When this project is completed, which will be between 2008 and 2010, what we will have is a digital tax lot base map for the entire state. Chair Johnson asked, what is this going to mean to counties? Well, one of the things that it will mean is that currently when you put new subdivisions on these maps, the maps that you have seen, it takes the cartographer anywhere from 2 to 4 days to do it. When it's on a GIS digital base map, it'll be 2 to 4 hours to put a subdivision in. So the efficiency to the county is pretty, it's quite an impact. And just to give you an idea of the number of maps, there are over 40,000 maps throughout the state in all of the counties, and those reflect about 1.6 million tax lots. And, of course, those are only growing. So that amount of work will certainly be much more efficiently done in a Goal 4 environment. The other thing that will be quite different is that currently these tax lot maps are only updated on an annual basis in the counties, and when they are digitized in a GIS environment, they'll be able to be continuously updated, so you won't have that backlog of occurring. And finally, Chair Johnson asked what the relationship was between the ORMAP program and the state GIS program. And basically, when this is complete, today even, we're about halfway there, there are applications for the statewide GIS program that Cy will chat with you about. And when we complete it, there will be even more, because this will allow the very base or foundation for a lot of the other maps to lay on top of it, so that you'll have emergency response reactions and those kinds of things. Again, Cy will deal with that. Unfortunately, our technology this morning did not work. So you have this handout, and we have black and white pictures, which I admit are not very good, but they are on page 74 of your handout. And Cy is just going to real briefly walk you through this so that you can see the application for the GIS and ORMAP partnership.
My name is Cy Smith, for the record. I work for the Department of Administrative Services, and I'm the statewide GIS coordinator, as Karen mentioned. Actually, if you look at page 73, that shows a status map of where we are with regard to the tax lot mapping program. And it refers to Goal 4 on that page, I believe. And that is the most highly accurate tax lot mapping. That's where we're ultimately the ORMAP program needs to get to. That's where all the counties need to get to in order to provide the best possible data that we can combine with other information. Tax lot mapping is, the tax lot maps are probably the single most important geographic data set that we have in state and local government. They drive so much of what goes on in terms of permitting, in terms of providing local government services like sewer and water is all tied to tax lot maps. Transportation services are tied to tax lot maps. And at the state level, it's very similar. You have a lot of permitting systems that are being put in place by and being administered by state agencies that need to be driven by accurate tax lot mapping, emergency services. So if you turn to the next page, I was just going to run through fairly quickly a couple of examples to show you how tax lot maps might be used in terms of either emergency services, or we'll also look at state lands inventory. On this first map, we're in the city of Troutdale on page 74, Multnomah County, and we've got an aerial photograph underneath the tax lot boundary lines that you see in white there, and you can see a circle on a large arrow, and we're going to zoom in to that, and if I had my projector here that was working, it would be a nice color, and we'd have it on the wall, and you'd be able to, this would make a lot more sense, but I think we can get through this. On the next page, then, we've zoomed into that area that was in the circle on the first page, and you can see that you've got tax lots here, and you've got addresses. Those numbers in each tax lot represent the addresses for that, for those tax lots. You've got a range of addresses on that street, on that block, from 200 to 299, But you can see that the addresses only go from 203 to 243. So if you're an emergency responder, what's going to happen here is the way that they get to the right place is right now they look at address ranges. So your address range is 200 to 299, and then they interpolate between that address range. So if you want to get to address 243 Harlow Avenue, then what happens is they use software, and it puts 243 about halfway between 200 and 299. But you can see on the map that 243 is actually at the far end of the block because that's the way it's actually addressed. So when you send an ambulance out there, they're looking for 243 in the middle of that block. They slow down, they look on the other side of the street, and before you know it, they've used up an extra minute or two that they really needed to get to the person who was having a heart attack. And metrics indicate that even a minute or 2 minutes makes a huge difference in terms of saving lives. So it's not a very good system that we have right now to get to an exact place. And the next page is another example of that. If you're looking for 211 Harlow Avenue, which is in fact, in reality, in the middle of the block, 211 by the system we use now that's not related to tax lots gets you up near the intersection. And again, the ambulance is looking around for it and takes longer to find it. If you had accurate tax lots on the next page, you can see that the tax lot, using that to route the emergency vehicle, gets you exactly to the right house, the right address, and very, very quickly. So that's one of the reasons why it would make a lot more sense if we were able to have accurate tax lot data to use for emergency services. On the next page, we're looking at an inventory, an entire map of the state that shows state-owned land, federally owned land, and private land for the state of Oregon. And again, not being in color, it's a little hard to pick this out, but the really dark spots are the state land, and the other gray areas are federal lands, and the light colors are private. So we're able to, across the state, we're able to have at least somewhat of a picture of state lands, but when you start to zoom in on that, you'll see in just a moment that it's not a very accurate picture. The next page shows we've zoomed into Columbia County, and we just show a sample of three state agencies that own property in Columbia County. We've left off Department of Transportation, Fish and Wildlife, and Parks and Rec, but we do have the university system, state lands, the Department of State Lands, and the Department of Forestry shown on there for Columbia County. And on the next page, it shows just a quick example for one piece of property owned by the university system, and you can see that a lot of data is tied to that land. That's the kind of thing that we keep in the system so that we can recognize who owns it, how big it is, the address, et cetera, what it's used for. We're going to look really quickly at the tax lot lines, and so we're going to zoom in to some land that is right now at Goal 2, which is not a very highly accurate representation of tax lots, but it's the easiest thing to get to, and that's where we're starting with the SOARMAP program. We needed to have something that was a tax lot inventory across the state. And then we're going to make it more accurate over the period of the next few years. So we started with this goal two, and if you look at the next page, you've got an aerial photo, and you've got, if you can see that, there's a square that indicates a group of property there, and you can see these very light tax lot lines. They're actually out of place, and the point being made there is that the Goal 2 tax lot lines are actually shifted quite a bit to the northeast, and some of those lines are in the Columbia River.
You're looking at page 82, I see.
Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Yes, yes. And this is Goal 2. This is the way they look if you take the tax lot lines as they exist on the Mylar today. You digitize those, or you put them into computerized form, and you lay them over an aerial photo. In many counties, they don't match the aerial photos very well.
And why is that? Why does that occur?
Well, because the tax lot boundaries were put in place without the benefit of aerial photography in most cases. They were based on the best survey data, but typically in many cases, in most counties, they are going to be shifted somewhat. Some are less shifted than these. This happened to be an area that where you had quite a bit of shifting, as much as I think it says 150 feet here. And then another title slide. Yes, sir.
What's the scale accuracy on your photograph?
The accuracy on the photograph is plus or minus 40 feet.
Well, that's part of your error.
That's part of that could very well be part of the error. Right.
So we've got two systems, both that have some degree of error in them.
Yes, sir. And the ORMAP program at goal 2, the error is generally more than what you see on the aerial photos. So the aerial photos tend to be more accurate.
Sorry, can I add a little to that? Excuse me. I think the main thing that is going to improve the accuracy of the mapping is when the maps were originally done, they were done based just on legal descriptions, kind of pieced together like a quilt. And it wasn't ever tied down to the land, and we really in those, this is like 40 years ago when we did the maps originally, we did have survey data, but those surveys themselves weren't necessarily as accurate as they are now. And so what we have now is we have GPS technology where the surveyor can go out on the land and sit over a monument corner and know exactly where it is on the earth. And so what we're doing with this new mapping system is we're taking our legal descriptions, all our parcels, and we're tying it down to those corners that are known positions on the earth. Therefore, our map is oriented in a way that is going to be relate to any other layer of data that has the same accuracy built into it, or data that is just tied to a tax slot. And so the difference is our old maps are just sort of floating around out there. The new map is really tied down, and the surveyors are the key to doing that. It's a control that is much more accurate. It's down to, like, in some cases, like centimeters as opposed to feet. I hope that's true. Sorry.
Yes, that's a very good explanation. Cy Smith, Department of Administrative Services. In the interest of time, I'm not going to run through these last few pages, but the point that I was attempting to make here is that right now, because we're trying to put tax lots in place across the state, and we're trying to stitch together tax lot maps that were originally created one at a time, not trying to fit together one map next to the other one and so on, you're going to have, in goal 2, tax lot lines that do not fit the ground very well. In goal 4, you're going to have tax lot lines that do fit the ground very well. And on those last few pages, it just shows some of the reasons why you would want to do that. You don't want tax lot boundaries that run through the middle of houses and buildings and so on. If you're going to have an accurate inventory of state-owned land, which is one of the things that the state government would like to have tax lots for, you need to have those boundaries in the right place so that you know that the buildings that you see on a tax lot are, in fact, the buildings that actually belong there. And one final point, just to go back to what Senator Johnson had asked about, that is that the Department of Administrative Services and the Oregon Department of Revenue are working very closely together on this project, and the ORMAP program is going to produce something, I think, that is going to be very, very useful for a lot of state agencies. There is no other state agency that is working on producing tax lots now, but in the past, many state agencies have had to go out and try to produce their own or gather that data from all the counties individually as they needed it year after year, and so the idea is to develop something that all the state agencies can use without having to go to that effort and expense.
Madam Chair, that completes our presentation, and we want to thank you for your understanding on our technical difficulties with our projector. Thank you
very much.
Question.
Senator Morris.
The DAS GIS activity and the revenue ORMAP activity, what do they have in common that if those resources were pooled could create greater efficiencies, acceleration of outcomes, and better quality? But why are they standalone activities?
Cy Smith, Department of Administrative Services. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe that the reason that they are standalone activities is that the Department of Administrative Services does not really have an ongoing funding source or budget. We have a very small assessment that's placed against every state agency to fund the coordination activities. So what we try to do, we have a group of four people, including myself, that try to do that. We work with a lot of state agencies to coordinate their activities in terms of producing data like this. Tax lots is one of the data sets. Street center line to also help with emergency services is another data set. There are probably 100 data sets that are being produced at local, state, and federal levels that we try to coordinate. So really we do combine our resources. What I try to do is I try to get my arms sort of wrapped around all the different resources that are being expended in state government and try to leverage that against federal investment in the same kind of data in Oregon and local government investment. We could certainly always do a better job of that, but I think that we do in many ways combine the resources now. But I guess the main point is that I'm trying to coordinate a very large program across all state agencies and local governments, and the ORMAP program is one of those efforts.
Does your activity coordinate, or do you create?
Madam Chair, representatives and senators, members of the committee, my activity merely coordinates. We have four people, and we don't create the data. We coordinate the activities to get the data created for use by all state agencies, local governments, et cetera.
Follow up, please.
Who creates the source data that all the agencies use?
The source data. Well, some of the source data is created at the local government level. In fact, quite a lot of it is. The things that we were talking about earlier, recordations, deeds, and so on, is part of the source data. In many cases, it's local governments creating the source data. And so what I try to do is find ways to channel state money and federal money down to the local governments to get that data created. The ORMAP program is one really, really good example of a way to do that. Some of the source data is created in state agencies, but not a lot of it.
Madam Chair, I'd like to... Jerry Hansen, Washington County. I'd like to add to what Cy said about that. I think the thing about ORMAP that I would guess that we're quite a ways ahead of most other states on is our coordination. And the ORMAP Advisory Committee, as an example, has people on it from a variety of the state agencies, including Cy. It has private sector people who will, you know, become users of this ORMAP. And the reason it's so important to everybody is everybody has their own unique data, and they may get it from a source or they may create it themselves, but it's unique to them in terms of their needs. But what they'll be able to do with ORMAP is they'll be able to overlay that data onto a base map that'll be accurately registered with the Earth. And so any function that's related to the land, you will have a base map to put it on, and that's, of course, the concept of GIS is layering different information. And so we know, based on the coordination that's going on, this will be the outcome of this work, which is a tremendous amount of work. And I wouldn't want to see it happen any other way, and I just want to say that this stream of money isn't a tremendous amount of money. It's less than $1 million per year, and that may sound like a lot, but it's what it's done is it's just provided the glue to bring all these folks together to focus on this, and it would have otherwise been a disjointed effort. So I think it's just a great project, and I suppose you could always improve the coordination, but I think it's been really excellent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, we'll now invite Ms. Horshenko back up. And just to get everybody on the same page, what we're going to do is to begin the high-level overview of the agency again in, as the commencement of the Phase 2, and invite you, if you have any comments with respect to anything you heard in the testimony this morning, in the public testimony. And then we're scheduled for Department of Revenue for two more days. And hopefully we'll be able to move through in that period of time. So with that, good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Excuse me. Members of the committee, for the record again, Elizabeth Harshenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. Before I go into the back into the high-level overview, I would like to just make a couple of comments on the public testimony. First, the counties. I don't think you could have gotten a better picture of the work that happens at the local level in administering the property tax system than from the folks that you heard from this morning. We have 36 partners in the property tax system, and they're all very different in the amount of resource they have, their population base, the mix of property in the county, and they all are doing the very best that they can, I think, to make sure that the property tax system operates uniformly across state government and consistently according to, which is actually a constitutional requirement, as well as according to the statutes and the rules that we've put in place. The role we play with respect to the counties and the property tax system is mostly supportive, I would say. They're the ones who get the people walking in the front door and talking to them across the counter and wanting to look at the maps or looking at the value that's been placed on their property or to deal with an appeal or anything else. We provide backup in three dimensions, I think. One, valuation of complex properties, which we've talked about, utilities and industrial property, where it's a very very technical field, and many of the counties don't have the staff resources or the technical expertise to do values, and it's more efficient for us to do those values, defend them, and then share them with the assessors and to get them on the tax roll. Two is standards. For performance on, and the assessors referred to those things in terms they were talking about ratio studies, where they have to evaluate, gather data, and make sure that the values they have assigned to properties that are of their responsibility, which is the residential property and commercial property and light industrial, that those values are being carried on the tax rolls fairly and consistently across the county and across the state. And we also provide standards for the maps. In addition to the mapping program that you just heard about, the assessors have to maintain accurate maps in order to be able to do accurate values, which, of course, is foundational to fair taxation in the property tax system. And so we establish standards for appraisal, we establish standards for maps, we establish standards for management and all the aspects of administration of the property tax system at the local level. And then finally, we provide training. And our folks train people at the local level on everything from compliance with the local budget law, appraisal issues, special assessment requirements, and exemptions, mapping. So the partnerships happen at a lot of different levels. I think to talk just for a couple of seconds about ORMAP, I really appreciated Jerry's comments. He has been a real force on that advisory committee, which is a group that advises me and has helped develop the policy for distribution of the grant dollars that we get from the recording fee. It's a dollar of the recording fee in the counties comes into this fund to help pay for developing a digital map base, property tax map base. And we have representatives from the federal government, other state agencies, local government, and the private sector on that advisory group. And some folks have been there for 6 years and have been very, very dedicated to make sure that the work that we're doing is going to benefit not only the property tax system, but all of the layers of information that can be attached to the ground, as Jerry and Cy were telling you.
So I think you've had a good high-level overview on the property tax system this morning. I'll just remind you that we administer your income tax programs, which is about 95% of the state general fund, personal income tax being the largest, obviously, corporate income tax. We administer the tobacco taxes. We collect taxes for some local governments, the transit districts. We collect taxes for. We collect quite a few special purpose fees, as we illustrated in phase one, that go to very special purposes for state government, and try to make sure that all those systems work just as efficiently as we possibly can. In response to many of the questions, I thought it felt like a long time since we were here, and it has been. We were here in early February, 8th and 9th, and so we've distributed.
Before you move into the rest of your presentation, mm-hmm. I just want to go back and touch on this assessor's funding issue again. I think the presentation we had was very enlightening. And in reviewing your prioritizations, you apparently the agency has prioritized this $5 million right below your core functions. Is it fair then to deduce from that prioritization that this relationship is a relationship of value to the department, and it's one where you see this partnership on the ground as being essential to the smooth functioning of much of your program?
Madam Chair, the partnership. I would say two things. I would say that the funding stream to the counties that goes through that grant program, and this $5 million is attached to that, we call it CAFA, but it's the County Assessment Function Funding Account, is what that acronym stands for.
And when you say that, you're saying both the other funds piece and the general fund piece.
Correct.
Okay.
The entire grant program is something that the legislature set up as an inducement to the counties to be sure that they adequately fund the assessment and taxation function at the local level, because it benefits all local government and the state as it affects the schools. And the $5 million has been something that, as I think you heard from the testimony this morning, has been very important as a supplement to the funds that flow through that grant program. It certainly gives us the opportunity, instead of coming in as sort of the big bad state and hammering away at county commissions who are making difficult decisions about how to spend their general fund, it allows us to come in with some carrots and say, in partnership, because we have the interest, common interest of the health of this system, here's resource that the state is providing to help you help all that are dependent upon that system. So we do our part. We are in constant contact with our county partners through many joint groups. The ORMAP group is one, but we have a joint group with the assessors that meets regularly, and where we're trying to make sure that we're that property tax system is healthy.
And just to restate this to make sure we're clear on the record, because this was the most important takeaway piece for me this morning, you have within the agency's discretion the ability to withhold grant funds from a county that is not working diligently to make sure that their property tax records are appropriate and are aiding the overall collection in that arena. Is that not correct?
That's correct, Senator Johnson. We have the ability to withhold those grants if the county has not adequately funded and staffed its assessment and taxation function.
Did you withhold any in the last biennium?
We have not had to withhold any. What we've been able to do, and Karen can show you some of the battle scars, is when a county looks like they are at risk, our property tax people go out, meet with the commissioners. In the case of Lane County, we went in and did a study and met with the commissioners and the budget committee and said, here's what's happening in your system. Here's what you are losing. Here is what the taxing units that depend upon your work are losing because of the erosion in the funding of your property tax program. And here's what you need to do to get back on track. And they responded and said, we understand, and we're going to do it. And so they made that commitment to do it. So that grant is a very powerful tool. Instead of us having to go in and punish and take it away, it's something that the counties want because they know it really helps them fund that program, and they're willing to match and meet the standard. So we have had a couple of close calls over the last 8 years. I can think of four. Where the commissioners really needed, I mean, if we had to go in and demonstrate, here's where you are, here's what you're missing, here's where you need to be in order to adequately fund the system, in order to get this grant, and we do have the authority to withhold it. And sometimes it's kind of nose to nose, but eventually the commissioners have said, okay, we understand, and we will adequately fund.
At what cost do you have to remind the counties that were lagging? When you went down to Lane County and you made the presentation, give me a sense of magnitude. Is this just internal staff does a little white paper, or are you doing a thoughtful review that is thousands of dollars in staff time and data research?
I would want to ask Karen to give you the detail on that, and maybe we could bring something back to you tomorrow.
That would be fine.
On the cost of doing those studies. Sometimes it's as simple as getting to the commission early in their budget process, talking about the importance of assessment and taxation and the role of it for the county as well as the other districts, and that's sufficient. Lane County was kind of an extreme example because they've struggled for so long.
I would also hope that through Association of Oregon Counties and other mechanisms that the county would remind their members how important this is, and to not put the agency to any additional cost to have to come and beat up on them to make sure that they're eligible for the grant.
Madam Chair, we get out and visit with the assessors and commissioners in the counties as frequently as we can. We work closely with Association of Oregon Counties and the Association of County Assessors to give information to county commissioners about the grant program, about the importance of adequately funding assessment and taxation, and responding to their questions. And it's a part of our support for the health of the system.
Thank you very much. I think I've about run this one into the ground. Anybody else want to try to take that on or away from me?
Madam Chair.
Representative Krupp.
I would love to. Madam Director, could you share with the committee the issues that arose with the NORPAC settlements and where we're at in terms of trying to rectify those problems that resulted in that? Could you give a narrative to the committee and then where we're at on trying to fix that problem?
By narrative, I presume that is an explanation, because I think you're talking to colleagues who are not as up to speed on that issue. I know certainly I am not. We need some background to have this be a thoughtful committee discussion, I think.
All right. Madam Chair, the issue that Representative Krupp is talking about is the department is responsible for valuing high-value industrial property, and that includes food processing plants. We've had a substantial amount of external economic forces affecting our food processing industry in the state. I know all of you have heard about that varying times. The impact has affected values of properties, and we've had a lot of cases on appeal had worked their way through up into the tax court. And since we're responsible for doing those values, we have to figure out what this impact has been. We've recently gone through a substantial amount of negotiation with a number of very large food processing companies about the values of their plants. And NORPAC is an example that's local here in Marion County. I think Doug left. Doug Ebner, the Marion County assessor, would probably be able to give you all of the detail. But it's a significant number of plants that were subject to appeal, disputed values for several years, 5 or 6 years for many of those plants. And we just, in the last couple of months, concluded a sort of a global settlement on those values. And it was there's a fairly significant reduction in value for those plants because of the economic the changes in the global economy and competition in terms of food processing and distribution. And so there have been refunds that Mr. Ebner needed to be prepared to make coming out of the collection of property taxes, current collection of property taxes that have affected the budgets of many local units, the county, the cities in the county, fire districts, the small cities have all been affected by those refunds, and then value reductions going forward. Representative Krupp met with me very shortly after our phase one hearings, and we talked about ways to speed up the appeals process, prevent cases from lingering for as long as this particular set of cases did before resolution. And we have a meeting scheduled with you, sir, on Thursday afternoon with some suggestions for some language. And just at a very high level, I would let the committee know that the department has met with the tax court judge, the chief magistrate of the magistrate division of the tax court, Mr. Ebner as the president of the Association of County Assessors, and an attorney who represents many of the companies, the industrial taxpayers who end up litigating values with us, to try to figure out how to shorten down the process and create a much higher level of interest and concern on the part of all players to move toward resolution of these cases just as quickly as is possible. So we will have some language for you on Thursday afternoon, as well as some rule changes that the court is going to look at and practice changes the court is going to look at, and some rule changes that we will be looking at as well to try and compress that process and get the assessors involved much earlier and not have things languish as long as they have.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Director. I might make mention to you that we may have to potentially reschedule Thursday's meeting as I have a funeral of one of my soldiers killed in Iraq.
Oh, sorry. To attend to. We will reschedule.
So my staff will be talking with you about that. The ultimate effect of this case that several cases actually compiled into one that drug on for almost 6 years was that NORPAC was granted ultimately a reduction in their property taxes, as I think was appropriate. The effect of that was that under the law, when those refunds are granted, all of the taxing districts within the county bear a burden. Some of that comes away from them. It's taken from their budgets. And probably the things that create some issues there are just the length of times and the inability of local taxing districts to participate in some of those settlement discussions. Taxing districts relying on being told that, yeah, we're going to win this case, and they don't put aside any money for the eventual outcomes. And
shame on them.
Shame on them, I agree. And as a board member of one of those taxing districts for 1 year now, we are and a taxing district, by the way, that's never received a penny of benefit from any of the NORPAC's property taxes. Yet we're having to lose $10,000 out of our little tiny fire district. And we're clearly have an interest in this issue. And it is hopeful that we're going to be able to make some changes, Madam Chair, in the process through this kind of informal work group that we've put together to shorten these time frames so that these things don't drag on. Because you keep in mind, the refunds also included 12% per year interest accumulation, which I'm okay with. But again, that length of time also contributed to a great deal of additional expense at local taxing districts here.
Well,
so
it seems to me that was a somewhat anomalous situation, and I think I have heard the director say express her willingness to work with you, and I appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
In the 5 minutes that we have left, let's at least launch into your high-level overview. recognizing we're going to run out of time, and we anticipate then, I think all of you got the memorandum from Dallas following through on what we're going to do on days 2 and 3.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I may follow on.
Please. That.
I have drafted recommendations with respect to this budget there with the co-chairs right now. I hope to get them to you this afternoon. You'll notice there is a tentative schedule change because of a potential conflict this Thursday. We now don't have committee scheduled for Thursday. We have moved up the tax practitioners to what we see as a very short budget hearing on Wednesday, to move that one out, hopefully to finish the Department of Revenues on Wednesday and the tax practitioners on Wednesday. But again, I hope to have a memo to you this afternoon on our recommendations with respect to the Department of Revenues budget and also the tax practitioners.
Then I think what I'm going to do, given that we have 5 minutes left, is to, unless there's objection from the committee, to adjourn for today. We'd start fresh with your presentation. We will have had the benefit of seeing the professional staff's recommendation. You can comment on that and then move through your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is that agreeable with everyone? With that, then, I am going to close the public testimony on House Bill 5066, and without objection, declare us adjourned until 8:30 tomorrow morning.